Join us, please. I saw, let's see. Hey, Vic, Senator Sobel wants to come up here. Thanks. Good to see you. Okay, I would like to call the meeting to order. This is the Educational and Cultural Affairs Public Hearing and First Reading of Local Bills meeting, November 19th. Faith, would you please I'm going to call on someone to lead the Pledge of Allegiance first. Angel Gomez, Commissioner Gomez, where did he go? Would you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. Okay, Faith, would you please call the roll?
Senator Smith? Senator Sobel?
Gotcha.
She's here. Okay. Senator Sachs? Senator Brannon? Representative Clark Reed? She's here. Okay. Yes. Representative Moraitis?
Here.
Representative Thurston?
Hey.
Representative Rogers? Representative Moskowitz? Representative Edwards?
Here.
Representative Schwartz? Representative Gibbons? Representative Jones?
Here.
Representative Pritchett? Representative Diaz? Representative Stark?
Here.
Representative Trujillo? Representative Waldman?
Here.
Senator Ring? Okay, we don't have a quorum yet.
You were here. At this point, we don't have a quorum, but that only affects the local bills. We do have members here enough to listen to public input, so that's what we're going to do. But before we get started on that, I would like to welcome my good friend, Mayor Dan Sturmer, the mayor of Weston, to give us some greetings. Mr. Mayor, you are recognized.
Mr. Chair, good afternoon, and members, representatives, senators, and staff in the public, good afternoon. And welcome. You can hear it out there. You can't hear it there. And welcome to the city of Weston City Hall. This is our local government at its finest. And I had the pleasure 2 weeks ago to host two, and next week I'm hosting a third, a student council swearing in. So we actually, in the chamber that you're sitting in today, go from our elementary school students to now have our state representatives and senators here. And it's truly remarkable that children get to see everything that goes on in government. We also have every week, when we have meetings, students lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. The work you do is important on a whole host of reasons, and I don't have to tell you why. But you know what? We look upon you to help us with things that are of local nature in Tallahassee to get done for the benefit of everybody, regardless of party, regardless of belief. But what's in the best interest of this state, this county, and its residents and its businesses? We never here in Weston leave out businesses because we do government a little differently than everybody else. This city, in the city hall you're sitting in, has 9 employees. We have a budget general fund of $115 million. We do things differently purely on a business model. And we appreciate the pragmatic approach you take when you go to Tallahassee looking things at a business model. Earlier today, Commissioner Sharif, now Mayor Sharif of Broward County, spoke about getting down to business. And when we ask you for something, it's purely because we have, and just as other cities do, we hope, looked at things from a pragmatic business approach and things that we think are beneficial to the community, not just for the sake of asking. So we welcome you to the city. We understand today you've got a limited agenda. But if there's anything this city can do for you, regardless of which part of the county, north or south, or here in Broward that you represent, whether you're all the way on the ocean side or out here with Representative Stark, or Senator Ring, please let us know. We're involved and we care. If you need us to come to Tallahassee to speak on things, let us know because we will gladly do so. I want to thank in advance Representative Waldman, Chair Waldman, for running this meeting in an efficient manner. and for putting forth the bill we've asked them to put forth again this year. And ladies and gentlemen, we welcome you to the city, and if you have any questions or anything we can do, we have staff with us here this afternoon, and with me also is Commissioner Angel Gomez, who is the longest-serving member of the City Commission currently. We have term limits here, so we sort of turn over every once in a while. But we want to welcome you, and if there's anything we can do for you, please let us know. Good afternoon and welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We appreciate it. You've got a beautiful facility here and a great city, so thank you for having us. With that, as I said before, we do not yet have a quorum. We require 10 members in order to have a quorum. So I will be anxiously watching the door and seeing if people come. Once we do have a quorum, we will revert back to the local bills and take those up. At this time, though, we've now are in the public hearing portion of our meeting. All speakers will be allotted 3 minutes each for their presentations. As of now, we have 12 speakers. We would appreciate your cooperation in turning your cell phones off or set them on vibrate so that we will not be interrupted by phones ringing. If there's anyone else in the audience who's interested in speaking to the legislative delegation and who has not previously signed up, please fill out a speaker's form and submit to Faith Lombardo or Lisa Aronson, who are right up in the front there. Raise your hands, please. There you go. I said that because that's written down in my notes to have them raise their hands, so I just wanted you all to know that. After each person speaks, the members of the delegation will provide a time for questions. I will use my discretion at the point when I think it's time to move on. But with only 12 speakers, I'm hopeful we're actually going to get out of here relatively early. And the first speaker is Pamela Landy, Assistant Vice President for University Relations at Florida Atlantic University. Welcome, Pamela.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair, members of the delegation, and honored guests, thank you for allowing me a few minutes to speak about the exciting things that are going on at Florida Atlantic University. FAU is currently serving more than 30,000 undergraduate and graduate students. This figure marks the highest student enrollment in the university's 50-year history. With over 5,000 students, our Davie campus is the largest branch campus in the entire state university system. Our tuition remains affordable and well below the national average at about $6,000 per academic year. We're glad that we were able to hold the line on tuition and fees this year after a series of increases in past years. The legislature took a lot of pressure off of us by restoring the $300 million that was cut from the system in 2012. Individually, FAU saw a restoration of $24.7 million. We're extremely grateful for your support and in the legislature and to Governor Scott for signing the budget that's helping to restore the financial health of FAU and all state universities. Thank you. In addition to restoring funding to our base operations, the legislature also provided the university with targeted funding in a handful of specific areas. One of those areas was our College of Medicine, which recently welcomed its third class of 64 students from a pool of over 3,000 applicants. Through our integrated patient-focused curriculum, our medical students are training in hospitals and physicians' offices throughout Broward and Palm Beach counties. I'm very pleased to report to you that Charles E. Schmidt College of Medicine's first residency program, which is in internal medicine, has recently been awarded full accreditation. As a result of your support, our graduate medical education program is continuing to expand. It is on track to create over 300 new residencies over the next 5 years. And our medical residents are just one example of FAU grads joining the local workforce. With the legislature's recent focus on employability, I'm pleased to inform you that the spring 2013 cohort of graduating accounting scholars are all fully employed with a base salary of more than $55,000. One of our signature themes is contemporary societal issues. With the help of a federal grant, the PROPEL program on our Davie campus was created to improve and streamline FAU and Broward School System's leadership development programs. PROPEL's school administrator preparation program is tailored to evolving needs of the school district and incorporates both current research and best practices. Another successful collaboration is in the creation of the STEM Summit and Summer Teachers Academy, and I know that Rep. Clark Reed and Rep. Jones were involved in that. The university's Greater Everglades Research Initiative is another example of cross-campus collaboration. FAU is situated directly adjacent to the fragile ecosystem, and we have a multidisciplinary research and education program designed to provide our students and community with sound science. As you can see, there are great many things happening at FAU. We're incredibly grateful for your support in Tallahassee, and I look forward to talking with you all in the coming weeks and months about our 2014 legislative agenda. Our requests for the next session are focused on leveraging our resources and strategic partnerships as we develop programs that foster entrepreneurship, utilize bioscience research for drug discovery, and advance the use of technology. We want to build on our current successes and continue to drive the economy of the region. I know several of you have had the opportunity to visit our campuses. If you haven't, we welcome you, and we look to show you some of the things that I've spoken about today. Thank you.
Pam, thank you. Thank you for being here. Just to let you know, my daughter is a graduate of FAU, so I'm very familiar with the school. It's a great school. I do also want to say, while some of us may have voted against the budget, we all supported increases in education funding. So even if we voted against the budget, we still support the money that's going to FAU. That being said, any questions? Commissioner Clark, Commissioner, I'm sorry, that's been a long time ago. Representative Clark Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted you to elaborate, if you could, on the what's happening with the Research Boulevard and Deerfield and the Research Center.
So that is, through the chair, sorry. Representative Clark Reed, that is the property of the Research Park at FAU, which is not an FAU institution. They are separately incorporated. I believe that Andrew Duffel, who is the executive director, does have a plan on track currently, and with your permission, I'll ask him to provide that information to you.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Representative Moraitis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and definitely thank you, Pam, and thank you, FAU, for all the great work. And it's not just Palm Beach County, obviously. It really affects Broward County, and I know that's why you're here. Just can you tell us some more of the initiatives that are going on in Broward County specifically as far as, you know, developing, you know, more job centers, things like that, using the research dollars that the university gets to do those things?
So the Davy campus, it has got two very focused areas of research, and they are Propel and education leadership training, where they're teaching teachers how to be principals, and that's through a federal grant, and we have a collaboration with both Broward College and with the school board system. And then we have Everglades research. There is an enormous amount of Everglades research being conducted on the Davy campus. So those are sort of the two focuses that fit within our three research themes, which are marine and coastal issues, bioscience, and other contemporary societal issues. We hope to see you on the Davy campus.
Great. Thank you. No other questions? We appreciate you. I did notice out in the audience there that we had a couple of officials out there that I wanted to recognize. I did see Commissioner Toby Foyer come in and stand. It's great to have you here. We love being in your house. Thank you. And Dr. Martin Schenck, the president of the Coral Springs Improvement District, he's going to be speaking to us a little bit later on the regarding the local bill, but here he is, and so we welcome you. That being said, we'll move on. I don't see Dr. George Hanbury or Dr. Fred Lippman here next in the audience, but they are the next ones. Is there anybody here to speak on behalf of Nova Southeastern? Well, we'll come back to them if we see them. We'll go to Dr. Claude Toland, the Art Institute of Fort Lauderdale, if in fact you're here. I guess not. So we'll skip you two. We'll go to, this could be a short meeting. Steve Pattinson, Florida State University. There we go. Okay. Go Gators.
Thank you. I have a son there, too. I have one in each, so house divided. Mr. Chairman, members of the delegation, thank you for letting me represent Florida State University today. I am a longtime resident of Broward County, an alumnus and member of the Board of Directors of the Alumni Association, and also work at what I call in the Burger Kingdom down in corporate Burger King down in Miami. I'm really here today to thank you. During this last session, you passed and the governor signed a bill designating Florida State University as one of the two preeminent universities in the state. So thank you for passing this legislation. Along with it comes $15 million in incremental funding that will go a long way to assist us in achieving our goal of being a top 25 public university. And in fact, we've already made progress towards that goal. The latest U.S. News and World Report rankings listed FSU as number 40 among publics, and we moved from 97 to 91 among all public and private universities in the country. So we're in the top 100 and still working our way towards the top 25. So again, thank you for that. Your continued support of incremental funding will be critical to ensuring that in the next 5 years we achieve these goals. And there is a detailed document of metrics along the way for the five-year period that if you're interested, we can provide that supplementally. It's part of the proposal that the university president provided to the governor. This August, one of the most academically accomplished freshman classes in the history of FSU started their careers. There were 6,100 freshmen with an average GPA of 4.0 and SAT scores of 1830. By those measures, I would not have made it. It's a pretty impressive class. From Broward County, there's a very large number, over 4,000, which makes Broward, outside of Leon County, one of the largest counties of students enrolled at FSU. And of that number, of that 4,000, 780 were first time in their family going to college. So we think that's a significant achievement and more or less represents the ratio as well in the entire university. So we're seeing a lot of first time in their generations going to college. Like I was a long time ago, the first of my family to go away to a four-way school. As many of you know, FSU operates here in Broward, a Pembroke Pine charter school. It's a K through 5 school, and we serve over 600 students, including 36 gifted. And we kind of use it as a lab for an autistic center for 7 students that helps the university improve its education, providing our teachers with better tools to serve both populations. In terms of economic impact, FSU, if you kind of add it up, the earnings of the 100,000 plus alumni in the state, that's $7.8 billion. And again, surprisingly, Broward County has one of the largest concentrations of alumni outside of Leon County in the state. We have over 14,000, well more than Dade County. So there's a significant tie between Broward and FSU. Operating a business myself, I understand, and I'll wrap up real quickly. I understand the importance of making tough decisions, fiscally responsible decisions. We appreciate what you've done for us. We've done a fair amount of work, and there's a white paper available also that I can provide supplementally on what our blueprint is for creating jobs and preparing our students really for the workforce. So with that, I'm out of time. I'll be happy to answer questions.
Thank you.
If I can answer the questions.
We're going to go into overtime. Senator Sobel has a question here.
Okay. Sure.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your representation. I know that you have the lab school here, and I'm sure you're aware that the Pembroke Pine Charter School, Municipal Charter School, is separate from the lab school.
Right.
And the Municipal Charter School has issues with funding, and they've asked their constituents to pitch in. Not the constituents, the families that, of the kids right. that go to those schools to pitch in. Has there been any talk of expanding the lab school to sort of take over the charter school, the municipal charter school, as a way of solving the funding problem?
I don't know the answer, but I will get you an answer in 24 hours.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you. Any other Representative Stark?
So this is one of my more important questions of the day, but I did need to know, thank you, Mr. Chair, has Florida State been able to edge out the Gators in party school category?
No, but they're going to whoop us
actually,
in a week and a half.
Actually, I think it's an unfortunate ranking in many ways, but I think both schools are in the top 10, depending on which one you look at.
Of course, from the days when I attended, we don't really remember a whole lot of that, what took place in those party years.
Yes, I know that.
But we are hopeful that the Gators do beat the Noles in a week and a half. So not very optimistic, I must say.
I didn't think I could go 3 minutes without bringing football up, even though this is an academic session. But
I think that's all that people really want to talk about when you talk about
the
schools.
It'll be an interesting game. Like I said, I have one in each school, so I'm going to take them both, and it'll be interesting for me.
All right. Any other question? Anybody else? Representative Rogers.
Thank you. I should have asked this question also for the Atlantic. But can you tell me whether or not our students are better prepared coming to you than 5 years ago?
Yeah, and I'll kind of paraphrase. I listened to a presentation from our director of admissions. The preparation is significantly improved over the last decade in terms of inbound students, in terms of their overall preparation for collegiate academic life, as well as moving away from home. So from a high school preparation point of view, you see it in the scores, you see it in their preparation. I attend some of the orientation sessions, and it's just amazing to me the amount of effort put in preparing the students to get to the school and the amount of effort in orienting those students to be successful in school. There's a whole program at FSU in undergraduate studies to ensure that we don't lose students. As you probably know, the success rates sometimes, or the failure rates, are pretty high for the first-year students. FSU's is over 90%, and it's not an accident, because not only are they better prepared coming in, there's a lot of effort to assign counselors to students and have programs in place to make sure those students make it through the whole 4 years. They make it through the first year, or they'll make it through the 4 years.
Representative Edwards.
Thank you. Just want to follow up on the issue that was very contentious last year, and I anticipate returning to us again this year, and it's in-state tuition for students who were brought here by their parents illegally. We receive lots of emails and have had children, I think they're called the Dreamers, come to our delegation meetings. So I just wanted to see, one of the issues brought up last year was a fiscal impact to the universities if they were to provide that tuition break for that class of children. So do you have any thoughts on that, or has the university had a chance to win on that issue?
There's kind of the generic in-state tuition issue, which this really falls into, and the balance, the difficult balancing act that the university has tried to play over the last several years since 2008 has been keeping education affordable through a lower tuition and then keeping our faculty. We lost faculty at record numbers 2008, 2009. In some cases, they're going to Georgia and other states at a significant premium, 20-25%. With the cut in the funding from the legislature, it's been a tough, from a development point of view, that's your other opportunity for revenue. Tuition is the only other piece. That being said, we're committed to providing affordable education to all students, regardless of where they come from. And we appreciate the funding. The preeminence funding will help that balancing act. We've started a major campaign to raise money, including money for tuition. There's $1 billion development campaign going on right now. It's a pretty significant campaign. We're about halfway through it. So to the extent we're more successful in those, we'll be able to afford, if you will, more ability to provide affordable education to that population.
Thank you. Representative Stark, did you have a follow-up? Oh, Representative Edwards, go ahead.
Thank you. As someone in the delegation who is saddled with student loan debt from one of our state institutions, I have to speak on behalf of the population that does have this issue. Years ago, the states were allowed to finance student loans for their students, and the federal government came in and said, no, we can do it better. And with that, you know, now we're seeing students paying 7-8% in interest on their student loans, which I think is ridiculous. Is there any talk, you know, in terms of affordability? I recognize a lot of our students getting their graduate and undergraduate degrees have to take out loans. Mm-hmm. What is the consensus from our state universities and colleges in terms of either lobbying the federal government or having a way to go back to doing it the old ways with the states helping to finance the cost and then reinvesting interest in the university system?
I can't speak on behalf of all the state universities, but I have a student now in medical school piling up debt at, you know, $50,000 a year. It's going to be significant. And it is going to be an issue, and particularly at those kind of interest rates. It'll become effectively we're saddling students with the equivalent of a mortgage before they get their first paycheck, particularly if they go to postgraduate, which many students are doing. So we're very supportive of whatever effort can be made to reduce the debt load that these students have. Part of it's the tuition piece, how much they borrow, but the debt service side of it, To the extent that there are local programs that could do it more effectively at a lower rate, we would be supportive of that. I'm not aware of any initiatives, though, that are doing that right now. But I would absolutely agree with you, and we all believe that interest rates will go up with Fed policy on tapering, so it's just going to get worse in the future.
Great. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. We'll move on, but before we do, Commissioner Tom Kalman is here. He came in, the Western Commissioner. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate it. We've introduced the rest of them. They got here on time, but we're really happy that you did come because let me just say you beat Senator Sachs getting here, so you still win. The next agenda item would be Sheila Van Hoos from the Broward County Schools, but I understand the superintendent's on his way, so we'll hold off and wait for him. Next, we've got Dave Wallace, United Way of Broward County. Spoke to us last week and is back again for more.
Back again.
Welcome.
Good evening. Thank you, Mr. Chair and delegates. I want to talk to you this evening about quality standards for early learning providers. Faith is passing out the position paper as part of our legislative agenda, and also attached to that is a report from the National Institute for Early Education Research that ranks Florida 35 out of 38 states in per pupil funding for our VPK. So there's some important data there. First of all, I just want to say thank you for the work that the legislature did last year with House Bill 7165 in putting some really strong operational and accountability standards in place as part of the early learning work that we're doing in the state for our children. But that's only one leg in a three-legged stool. The other legs are providing quality standards and then providing funding so that we can pay for those quality standards and increase the number of slots for Florida's children. So according to a 2013 study by the Children's Forum, 68% of early learning programs in Florida are of minimally adequate quality, and almost 20% are low quality. And as I mentioned, the National Institute for Early Education Research ranks Florida's VPK program 35 out of 38 states in per pupil funding and reports that the Sunshine State's VPK program meets only 3 of the 10 nationally recommended standards. So we're asking that there be 5 changes be made as part of this session. First is that we revise the state's interpretation of parental choice to match federal guidelines. Child care developmental fund requires parental choice of type of child care setting. Federal requirements do not indicate that choice is open. Parental choice can and should be limited to programs that meet defined quality standards. Secondly, we're asking that the Florida statutes be amended to implement mandatory state-approved accreditation standards for all early learning providers using existing accreditation bodies such as Apple or NACE, and give all providers the option of choosing from any approved accreditation body. Thirdly, allow providers up to 2 years to meet those quality standards from an approved accreditation body and provide support to achieve that quality rating and build their capacity. And fourth, implement an effective and consistent quality rating system to assess, improve, and communicate the level of quality in early learning programs and give parents better information to guide their choice of provider. And finally, amend Florida statutes to restrict public funding to only those providers that meet specified quality accreditation standards from an approved accreditation body so that public dollars are only going to the quality providers.
Dave, thank you. Any questions? Representative Stark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question. If you could explain to me exactly what you mean by minimally adequate, and because I'm seeing you have a number of changes in there, but tell me what minimally adequate is and what would be, of all your wish list, what would be the biggest thing you'd want to do and what you think that we could get done up there?
Basically, what that child research is saying is that many of the providers, especially your mom and pop kinds of providers, don't have the level of teacher training and certification that your better providers do. And as part of our wish list, and what's really important as part of our quality standards for early learning is the development of your staff. And providing what accreditation bodies do is help raise the quality of your staff, certification, training, education levels. And then also a big part of that is going to be around developmental screening for vision, sight, and developmental issues for kids.
Representative Clark Reed.
Thank you very much for being here, and thank you very much for bringing this report. Ever since I've been in the legislature, I've been trying to get them to fund pre-K with more dollars, VPK. I've heard from some of the private providers that they are having some difficulty in getting the salaries of their teachers, getting the dollars to provide right. the salary increase to their teachers.
Right.
And that I understand that the Early Learning Coalition is working with some of those private providers, particularly when it comes to the curriculum, because of the staff's inability to meet those minimum qualifications for teaching, they're not able then to grasp the curriculum and to move that curriculum forward that the Broward County school system is looking for those kids to have when they come into kindergarten. So we have a big problem because those mom and pops, that's their living, that's their bread and butter, and the people who work there for them, it's the same, you know, that's their income also.
Right.
So we've got to find some way to bring the quality of the education in the early learning years up quite a bit, because there's a real missing piece there that we're not able to grasp. And I'm hoping that the legislature this year will be able to put some more money into the pre-K dollars rather than what's been there since I've been there since 2008.
And I know Representative O'Toole with the Education Committee has really been committed to this session working on our quality standards and the funding issues. So hopefully we can see some changes in that.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Sobel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you tell me what the qualifications are now to teach in a preschool?
I don't have that information, but I can get it for you.
Does anyone know that answer? I mean, I forgot.
It depends on if they're seeking accreditation from one of the accreditation bodies like Apple or NACI, there are certain standards. But if you're just opening up a business in your neighborhood, those standards are really rather minimal.
Well, I've heard from real teachers that some of the standards are really low.
Yeah, they are.
And that goes not only for education, but, you know, for a lot of other areas in our state where qualifications are very low when we provide services, whether it's education or in health care or for our seniors. So, you know, it's time Florida moved into the 21st century.
Right.
Okay. Anybody else? Dave, thank you, and thank you for everything you do for United Way. Appreciate it. We are going to revert back to the local bills portion since we do have a quorum here, and through past experience, I know that sometimes that disappears quickly. So at this point, we have one local bill that has been submitted to the Legislative Delegation Office. The Coral Springs Improvement District has submitted a proposed bill, which was emailed to your offices last Friday. A hard copy of the bill is in your folders today. Representative Moskowitz is the current bill sponsor. This is the first reading of the local bill, and I'll ask our delegation counsel, Mr. Steinfeld, to read the bill title of the local bill.
Yes. A bill to be entitled An Act Relating to the Coral Springs Improvement District, Broward County, amending Chapter 2004-469, Laws of Florida, providing for staggered terms of the Board of Supervisors, amending the amount of monthly compensation for members of the Board of Supervisors, amending quorum requirements for landowner meetings, conforming contract bidding requirements to general law, and providing additional requirements for procurement of goods or services, providing an effective date.
Thank you, Mr. Steinfeld. What I'd like to do is just give the summary of what this bill does, because unfortunately Representative Moraitis has stepped out, and we did lose that quorum as quick as I said we had one. This bill makes changes to the district governing board and operational protocol that cannot be accomplished without the requested changes to the special district special act charter. This bill provides staggering the limits, the terms of the office of the members of the district governing board, compliance with state law governing competitive bidding, consistency with general law regarding quorum requirements for annual landowners meetings, and increased compensation to district board members. A similar bill was filed last year, HB 1211, but died in Senate Rules Committee. Right now, what we will do is, I believe, well, actually, I know that Dr. Martin Schenck, the president of the Coral Springs Improvement District, is here, and I believed you wanted to address the delegation today. So please come forward and give us your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, we're not going to read the bullet bill in
delegation. I have to first preface my remarks. There were some revisions to the bill that Lisa knows about. And she'll explain what they were. Some were typos, and they were revised today, so it's not in your hard copy.
I do believe we do have a copy of the revised in front of us, so that was done. Is that what I have, one that says revised on it?
Mr. Chairman, you have a revision. This just came in at about 2 o'clock this afternoon, so we were not able to provide corrected copies for all of you, but we can read the amendments into the record. They are very minor.
Okay. And would you like to speak first, or do you want us to read the amendments in first?
Go ahead. Right now, the supervisors and the district is working under our 1974 charter. The changes we're requesting are, one, staggering the election process of the supervisors so that there's some continuation that is going on, rather than have the whole board being able to be replaced at once. The second revision that we're requesting is an increase to level 2 in our bidding process from what we started off in 1974 at $4,000. So everything right at this point, okay, everything over $4,000 at this point has to go out to bid, and we're requesting to go to level 2, which is, as my understanding, is $35,000. And 3 is an increase in the compensation from $200 a meeting to $400 a meeting for the supervisors. If Lisa would like to go
Lisa,
over.
Are there any other changes that he has not spoken about? Gene?
Yes, I'll read them. Line 22, the typo error quality is changed to be qualified on lines 56 and 57. The seat numbers, it makes reference to who will be elected. Seat numbers are changed to 2 and 3. On line 75, election is now elected. On lines 108 and 132, category 4 is properly category 2.
Thank you, Gene. And I'm assuming that Representative Moskowitz is okay with all of these changes. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. He was unable to make it today, and these are modifications that actually are reduction in terms of the competitive bidding requirements. The reduction from category 4 to category 2 is in line with a recommendation that was made when this local bill or a similar local bill was submitted 2 years ago, passed the Florida House of Representatives, but was stalled in the Rules Committee in the Senate. So the committee in the House, the Community and Military Affairs Subcommittee, had made a recommendation 2 years ago to reduce the competitive bidding threshold from a Category 4 of $195,000 to a Category 2 of $35,000. And as Dr. Shank just explained, they only have the ability to approve purchases at $4,000 or less without going out for competitive bidding. So they're looking for some additional flexibility, and they willingly agreed to amend the bill to a Category 2 to reduce the threshold that's in the original bill before you from $195,000 to $35,000. Okay. Their board voted on that recommendation and amendment last night.
Okay.
So I can't tell you for fact that Representative Moskowitz is aware of the modifications because we were hoping to get him on the phone. Today I can still try to reach him by phone if you would like me to do that now.
Representative Jones, have you had a chance to speak to him regarding this? Do you know his position? We can always modify this, though, up in Tallahassee. So I think that at this point, if all of the changes are in, essentially this is a substitution bill, a substitute bill, so we can approve the substitute bill at this point. But what I'll do is open it up for questions. Gene, was there something you wanted to say?
Just that there will be another public hearing on December 6th, so whatever modifications or problems can be certainly cleared up at that time.
Okay. Are there any questions? Representative Jones. Rogers. I was thinking about him. You're much better looking.
The public meeting that was held on October 21st, can you tell us who attended, who from the public attended your public meeting when you voted these changes in or recommendations?
I can tell you that there was nobody from the public that did attend. It is advertised. We send out a newsletter every month to all our residents stating that there is, they're welcome to attend our monthly meetings. We haven't had any public come for probably around a year. So nobody was there other than the Board of Supervisors and the department heads and our engineers, our attorneys, and everybody that was involved with the district.
Okay, follow-up question, Mr. Chairman.
You are recognized.
Over the years, we have heard of cities or counties believing that we don't need all of these drainage districts, their usefulness or their life as just should not be in existence. Have you heard that about this?
Yes,
one?
I have. First of all, we're not a drainage district. We're an improvement district.
Okay, I'm so sorry.
We are a full service. We produce water, so we take care of wastewater and drainage. I think that we run a tremendous district, and I do think that the employees and staff really have the best interest of our residents. And if the districts were somehow combined, I do not think that the residents would benefit from it. You know, we are very, very conscious of our budget. We have reduced the assessment for the past 2 years by 5%. We intend to reduce it by another 10% this year. We just completed a nanofiltration plant to upgrade our water distribution. We have relined some of our sewer system to prevent infiltration and decrease our costs. And I think it would be a mistake, personally, not because I'm on the Board of Supervisors of Coral Springs Improvement District, to somehow do away with the special districts, because I don't think that the cities have the ability or the knowledge at this point to supersede these specialized areas. Like I said, we're not a drainage district. I know there are in Coral Springs, there are separate drainage districts, but we're a full-service improvement district.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Clark Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What is your budget?
Our budget is between, I can't tell you exactly, but it's between $12 and $13 million.
Follow-up, Mr. Sheehan?
Follow-up.
And what is the reason for wanting to raise the supervisors?
Again, everything that has been in the 1974 bill. I know that I became a supervisor 2.5 years ago, and for myself, I've been spending a lot of time over at the district. I am not practicing anymore, so I have the time to be there, but I am there at least 5 hours a week, as well as the monthly meetings. We've had a lot of work to do. As far as what we do at our district, we provide sewer, water, and irrigation billing services for 5 other districts in the state. This adds approximately $200,000 in revenue to the district. And we also lease out rental space to 2 other water districts in Coral Springs that provide approximately $45,000. So any increase that is going to come from, to our compensation will not come from the residents. It'll come from these additional services that we are providing. And we also have, like I said, we have decreased by a total of 10% so far our assessments, and we intend to give another 10% back to the residents in decreased assessments.
Representative Edwards.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, may I be recognized for a series of questions on this bill?
Yes, you may.
Thank you so much. Sir, I appreciate your answering our questions on this. Are you familiar with the bill that Senator Ring filed last year dealing with, some constraints on these types of districts?
Yes, I am aware of
it. You just need to wait till she finishes the question and then answer.
Okay, so you're aware of it. And I think the overarching concern is we may deal with several bills of this nature in Tallahassee. And I think that where he was going, Senator Ring, with this was making sure that there was some uniform standards in place dealing with the issues that you present here, for example, how you can vote, who's entitled to vote, the compensation, and so forth. What concerns me is page 3, line 70, where I'm looking at, one vote per acre of land. So in essence, the more land you have, the more of a voting control that you a voting block that you control for the district, correct?
You're correct, but okay. Our district does not have any built-out lots. Nor do we have any large areas that are controlled by one landowner. So I'm aware of what goes on, but it is not pertinent to the Coral Springs Improvement District.
Thank you for your response. I appreciate it. Would you be agreeable to us working through your issues that you presented here in one bill that's applicable to all subdivisions similar to yours, drainage districts, water control districts, in a bill that would be applicable to other localities as well rather than doing a local bill?
Yes.
Okay.
But I would also, I have spoken to our council.
Mm-hmm.
There are some other issues that I was, I had asked him that doesn't pertain specifically to CSID, that pertains to all the districts.
Mm-hmm.
We've had questions about home rule between the districts and the city, and I thought that was also important that it be brought up in front of the legislature and it be decided by the legislature on all the districts, the special districts, about home rule. And, to be included, we have just finished our major restructuring and rebuilding of our physical plant. So I know we don't need anything more than level 2 as far as the bidding process. So to give us level 4, frankly, I don't want it. It leads to more.
Just to interject, because I don't want to move off what I think what she's getting at, but essentially a general bill would not necessarily be specific to some of the issues that you are raising here as it relates to Coral Springs Improvement District. So I think your answer would be while you would like some of those things that were in a general bill, you still need this local bill because it has things that are specific to Coral Springs.
I think so. I don't know what Representative Edwards was...
Yeah, take my word for it. You do.
Yeah, talking about, you know, in a general bill. But, you know, as far as I was...
I'm trying to help you here.
Yeah, I know. What I was concerned was, you know, us working under the charter of 1974, mm-hmm. as far as the, you know, the increased level for our bidding, just inflation, you know, would dictate that we need to get over, you know, 4,000. We can't purchase chemicals or anything without going out to, for simple.
All right. Representative Stark had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to know, what was the stumbling block in getting this thing passed, you know, not counting all the different amendments and everything were changed, but based on the way the old bill was written?
From what I'm aware of, in 2007, Coral Springs and North Springs had a bill passed by the legislature. It went to Governor Crist. He signed the North Springs bill and vetoed our bill. It was the exact same bill. And one was signed, one was vetoed. So we went back in 2010 or 2011 to the legislature and just asked for these changes. You know, we didn't go for, you know, the whole what had been approved or voted for in 2007. And it was a hold was put on by one of the senators, Senator Bogdanoff, and we were never able to, even though I wrote a letter, I never got any answer of why it was.
Well, we're hopeful Governor Crist is going to be able to sign it again this year. go ahead, Representative Givens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Typically, when the governor vetoes a bill, he issues a veto letter and explains that the veto letter explains exactly why he vetoed the bill. So what was in the veto letter?
Very nondescript, because I didn't ask for a copy of it. And like I said, it was the exact same bill and that was voted on for North Springs, which is also in Coral Springs, their improvement district. They were signed into law. Ours was vetoed. And I can't, from what I read, I can't explain why it was vetoed.
Well, you know, I've had a number of bills vetoed. And they've been very specific, whether it was good or bad, they were very specific as to why they, i.e., I put something in the bill that did not go through a process. It went through the legislative process as opposed through an agency process. So, therefore, that's very specific in why they vetoed the bills. Typically, the veto letter tells you exactly why. And if there was a bill, the exact same bill was signed, and the next one was vetoed, there's something missing there. I'm just saying, do you understand the process as I do?
No,
they're very specific in the veto letter.
I did not understand it, you know, when I got the when it was explained to me, because we had the same attorneys, the same lobbyists, the same everything, and they were both passed, and ours was not signed into law.
So all right, I think at this, Ms. Aronson, you have a comment.
Yes, I was going to suggest that since this bill is scheduled for a second and final hearing, I can do some additional research on tracking a veto letter so that the members have it before the second public hearing and finding out some of the additional research between why one independent district bill passed and why one didn't.
I can tell you that they had, you know, the one in 2007 had level four. You know,
okay.
For the
all right, plan. I'm gonna try to move this along because I've been trying to help you, and you just follow my lead on this, because this actually did pass the House actually unanimously. So we've already and the improvements and some of these changes are actually improvements to the bill to make it better than what it was. At this point, we really only need to pass it one time. Officially, however, what we'd like to do is move it along today. Representative Moskowitz hopefully will be here on December 6th, when we have the next local bill hearing. He can explain any other questions, but I think as a courtesy to him, we ought to move it forward. So what I'd like is a motion to accept the proposed local bill as amended, which was stated by what Lisa Aronson said and Gene Steinfeld and Dr. Shang. So I've got a motion. Is there a second? Okay. Faith, would you, I'll tell you what, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Show it unanimous. Okay.
I want to thank the delegation.
All right. You're not out of the woods yet, but let me try to help you next time, too. Okay. All right. So now we're going to revert back to the speakers, to the public hearing. I do believe Superintendent Runcie came in. There he is. How can I miss him? Come on up. We're gonna take you now, and welcome.
Thank you, Chairman Waldman. And I just want to first thank you and the rest of the delegation for the continued and relentless support and fight that you provide in the legislature on behalf of all our public schools and our students and family here in Broward County. It's been a real pleasure to know that we have partners and advocates in Tallahassee to help us to do this real important work that we have to get done here. With that said, I'll be brief and just outline, I think, about four items that will be the centerpiece of our legislative platform this year, and certainly we'll take an opportunity to meet with each and every one of you to get into more details. First and foremost, we all know that there's some huge challenges right now with the state's accountability system, and what we would propose along with other districts throughout the state is for an extension, maybe a two-year window, so we can work through some of the implementation challenges. We still believe that we need to stay firm on the accountability system. We need to maintain our commitment to Common Core, which gives us an opportunity to help our students to develop the skills that they need to succeed in the 21st century global technological marketplace skills, where they can develop critical thinking. They know how to collaborate and solve problems. Those are the kind of skills that we're working to develop with our students. The other part of the accountability system is the assessment. At this point, you know, given the governor's executive order to pull out of PARC and go through a competitive process to find a solution that's in the best interest of the state, our position is we want to ensure that we have an assessment system that is aligned with the standards in Common Core, an assessment system that allows us to benchmark ourselves nationally as well as internationally. And so I know we're going through that process now, and I would strongly suggest that representatives, whether it be superintendents and or their staffs from school districts throughout the state, be involved in that selection process to make sure that we select the right tool. I think it's a very, very important decision for us. Second piece is around class size. I want to thank Representative Moraitis for pushing forward some legislation last year that passed that gave us an opportunity to make some adjustments and some relief on that front. But what we're asking for is essentially the same rules and guidelines as exist for charter schools, which is basically assessing penalties on a school-wide level versus on a classroom-by-classroom level. Now, we're still committed to class size. We're still going to manage it within our schools, but it's really taken an enormous amount of focus and resources in the administration to try to figure out how to comply with on a classroom-by-classroom basis. And in terms of allocating our resources in the most strategic way, which varies from school to school based on the needs of the students. So class size would be the second piece. Third is around unfunded mandates. I would ask that any new items that come forth that impact school districts, that the financial cost and consequences of implementing those bills be considered, and if there is a cost, that there'd be some funding associated with it. And finally, around funding, I just want to thank the legislature for over the last couple years, we've seen increases in funding in the per student allocation in this state. I think that's been very appropriate. They were investing in education. The future of the state of Florida is going to be defined by the quality of the schools that we have. So that investment is appropriate, but we know that we're near the bottom. And since 2007, 2008, our funding per pupil When you look at the net reduction from where we were in the 2007-2008 period, Broward County alone has lost over $750 million. So we've made up some ground over the last couple of years. We're still short. So we look forward to continued investment in our public schools so that we can remain competitive. But if we do see some additional funding coming from the state, we ask that those funds not be earmarked for a variety of items, that we have flexibility with the funding to be able to do what we need to do within our respective districts. Again, thank you for your support of education. Those four areas, accountability system, class size, unfunded mandates, and unrestricted funding, if it does become available, is pretty much what our focus is. I know there's a lot of other things and bills that are floating out there, and we can't do a million things well. We've got to focus on a few. That's pretty much where our focus is. Again, thank you for your support and what you do in the legislature for Broward County Schools.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Superintendent Runcie. We appreciate what you're doing for our schools in Broward County. Representative Edwards has a question.
Thank you very much. It's nice to see you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wanted to follow up on where we're at with the teacher raises that we approved last year as part of the budget.
It's great that you should ask that. So today we officially passed the agreement that we had with the teachers union. So they ratified it. And today at our special school board meeting, we approved it. So we are moving forward to get those dollars distributed as expeditiously as we can. So the agreement with the unions have been worked out. And so we're happy to we're able to get those dollars to our teachers, who are really the folks that are on the front line. They define the success of this system, because we're ultimately measured based on our ability to help our students learn and reach their potential.
Follow up.
Thank you. I'm going to admit my ignorance as a freshman lawmaker when we debated. There was a lot of debate on the floor about the teacher raises, and I think lost in those details, many of us around the state lamented the fact afterwards we had anticipated that once those funds were available, the governor signed the budget, that boom, the dollars would magically appear in those teachers' bank accounts and go on vacation with it. And now here we are going into the Thanksgiving holiday, and just now the teachers are getting those funds, and I appreciate that. But I would like to ask you, going forth, what we can do to make sure we avoid that time lag. I would say it's a significant time lag between when the budget's approved and those funds actually do reach the teachers. What would you recommend that we do in going forward to fix that problem? Thank you.
Yeah, that's an interesting. The way it was structured at this point was that those dollars were issued to districts, and they were issued under the with the requirement that the terms of how they were distributed be worked out between the school districts and their unions, the collective bargaining unit. Given that we've just gone through that process, I would suggest to you that I feel that was a good process, because it really gave us an opportunity to do some pretty creative things within that benefited teachers. As an example, we used this process to restructure the step and salary schedules that teachers have. So normally what would happen, we gave a raise out to our teachers last year, the first year that I was here in the district, and that resulted in some teachers receiving, if you were in some of the earlier steps, let's say years 1 through 7, you may have received anywhere from a couple $100 to $500 for the whole year. If you were at the very top, you may have received $10,000 or $12,000. So a very skewed model. So we were able to use this opportunity to sit down with the union and create a salary schedule that is more equitable in terms of the distribution of compensation. So on average, teachers, the range right now will go from like $1,800 to about $3,000. So again, it's probably not a direct answer to you, but I think the process worked well, And I think we should probably continue that where those funds are distributed and we work through the collective bargaining process to figure that out. Because actually, under the collective bargaining process, every year we have to open contracts up to discuss wages.
Follow up?
Let's use the happy moment and the time to start thinking now. Hopefully we can have the same problem where we're distributing raises and we won't have to, again, have that significant time delay.
I agree.
But in negotiations, how was the issue with teaching additional time hours addressed with those teachers who had to take on seventh periods and in the past were not compensated? What was the agreement that you reached with the union on that?
Yeah, so what we've reached with the union on it is a recognition that there's a significant extra workload that those teachers have adopted. So any teacher that's teaching six out of seven periods under a standard structured schedule will receive about $2,500 in additional compensation. So they have a modified salary schedule. Those teachers, as they, and by the way, that's in addition to the increase, the teacher allocation that was distributed this year. So they'll receive the allocation on average of, say, $2,000, and then they'll receive this additional supplement on top of that. If they teach a seventh period, they will receive a flat salary of $6,000. So it's possible that you'll have teachers that are in high schools could be making up to $10,000 more than teachers in the rest of the system. So that's where we ended up.
Thank you. Senator Sachs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And welcome, Superintendent. In 2008, we passed a bill on anti-bullying. And just last year, Senator Bullard passed another one on anti-cyberbullying. What do we need in the Broward School District to fulfill the requirements of those two laws with regard to the education of teachers on how to recognize when bullying has occurred and then where they should, what steps they should take to handle those situations in Broward County?
In Broward, we've been a leader in this state in bullying. In fact, I believe that we're pulling together some information for your office. I think to continue that progress, we'll have to continue doing a lot of things that we have been, which is continue to get out to schools, work with our students, incorporating things into curriculum and creating learning opportunities around this topic, and providing additional training and support to our schools and our administrators, starting with our principals and assistant principals that are in our schools. So it's an ongoing effort. It's something that, there's just not one simple solution to it. It's really about creating a culture in a district, creating a culture in a school where all students can be respected, that students and adults can embrace alternative ways to deal with